It's Tuesday, April 26th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians dropped their fourth straight after being swept in the Bronx in New York. They flew to the West Coast and on Monday opened a series against the Angels in Anaheim. And Shane Bieber looked pretty strong, pitched into the seventh inning, had six strikeouts, and looked like everything was working. If I told you that the Guardians held Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani to 1-for-8, with the only hit being an accidental check swing triple by Trout down the right field line, I think you'd think the Guardians would have won in that game. But the offense, once again, just didn't show up.
Yeah, Joe, that's kind of has been a reoccurring theme. Either they, score 10 runs or they score no runs. And last night they got shut out. And I don't know. It was just, they had a couple chances, but, Bieber definitely deserved better. What did you think of him? You saw him. What do you think was working for him? And how did he look, strength-wise or just – his resiliency and do you think, is he ready to put spring training behind him and really kind of start the season now?
Yeah, his velocity was up on his fastball a tick. It wasn't, where we're used to seeing it still, but I think being in the warmer environment, being at home, being more relaxed and comfortable, I think, he was out there throwing all of his pitches. He was changing speeds and the ball was moving real well. He said after the game, he was confident in what he was throwing. He's just got to figure out a way to finish. And that really helped, a guy like Taylor Ward, who isn't the headliner on this Angels roster, is the guy who beats him with two home runs. Both times he'd gotten ahead of him in the count and wound up giving up, home runs. The first one went off the wall in right center field, and Miles Straw almost had it in his glove. It was a really nice effort, and we'll get more into Miles Straw and climbing up walls here in a bit. But just from Bieber's perspective, I think I can't tell if he's a little frustrated that there was three hits and no runs scored behind him, but. You got to feel bad for a guy who goes out there and pitched the way he did against a pretty good Angels lineup and didn't have anything to show for it.
Yeah, definitely. And, he comes out for the seventh. I was kind of surprised they sent him out for the seventh. I thought he was right around 90 pitches at, the end of the sixth. They've been really careful with these guys. But maybe now they're this is what Francona was talking about. You got to have that balance. You got to be able to, know when to stretch him out a little bit. And when you do that, maybe you pay a consequence or two. And that certainly happened with, what Max Stassi opens the seventh with a single. Then the guy gets a two strike bunt down. And then, Ward comes up there and hits the second home run of the game. And, that was too bad because Bieber really, he deserved better than that.
Yeah, and that's exactly the way that we've seen this offense struggle to support this pitching staff in the past. Up until then, they're just unable to string at bats together. They were 0-for-4 with runners in scoring position. They stranded six runners on base. It's been tough. The only offense really came from a kid making his major league debut in Richie Palacios. He looked real nice in his first two at bats, lining singles through the left side. And this is a kid who had just gotten called up on Monday. I got the call Sunday. His parents were in Lehigh Valley watching his older brother play in AAA. And they got the call, hey, you got to make it out to California. So they went west, cross country in time to see Richie get base hits in his first two at-bats. And just a really nice story for a kid who basically missed two seasons with a shoulder injury in 2019 and then the pandemic season in 2020.
Yeah, that was great. You did a nice job on the story, talking to his parents at the ballpark. Baseball family. His father played in the minors. I think he had an uncle that played for Kansas City, and his older brother made his debut with Toronto last year, and now Richie is up in the big leagues, and they got to be excited. That was fun to watch, and your kid's got a nice swing, nice level swing, and who knows? I mean, this is the seventh rookie that's made his big league debut this season for the Guardians. And who knows, Joe, there could be a lot more the way this season is going.
Let's put it this way. He will not be the last rookie to make his major league debut for the Guardians this season. That's for sure. Talking to Richie's dad and mom in the stands, they were thrilled, super excited about him making his debut and to have the success that he had. What's with Cleveland rookies this year? Not just, making their debut, but having tremendous success. You had Kwan, just be lights out for a week and a half there. And now he's sort of nursing that hamstring injury. And we'll learn more today when he's able to test that at the ballpark this afternoon. Tito said that, we'll find out if he has to go on the injured list or not.
Yeah, I think, we're seeing one of the reasons why, Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff, they targeted some players during the winter, free agents and some trade possibilities. But, they said they didn't want to, put too many obstacles in front of the players they feel from their farm system that they developed. And, sometimes that's, just hot air. Front offices, are famous for that. But maybe they know what they're talking about. At least initially, Kwan has been really good until he kind of hit the wall in New York and got hurt there. But he's still he's a solid, looks like a, really kind of a very, very interesting player. And Palacio comes up and has a great debut. So, that's exciting. It's exciting to see young players. It's kind of always a double-edged sword. He gets the two hits, but then he throws to the wrong base and, lets a, runner advance earlier in the game, but it didn't bite him. So, a lesson well learned there.
Yeah. You talk about hot air. We definitely need to get into the events of the weekend in New York and have a conversation about that. So let's do that now. Obviously, the Guardians went into the Bronx with high hopes of being able to go toe-to-toe with the Yankees. But that lineup and that offense really just sort of overwhelmed them over the course of three games. And in Saturday's game, we had the ugly incident with the Yankees fans in both left and right fields. We had Miles Straw coming to the defense of Stephen Kwan as Yankees fans cheered him while he was down on the field injured. And then once the game ended on a walk-off by Gleyber Torres, fans in right field were throwing beer cans and ice cream cones and all sorts of things at Guardians players out there. Oscar Mercado talking to them afterwards. The sense I got in watching and seeing, what transpired and the reactions of the Guardians players, I was impressed by the restraint that Straw showed by, going right up to the line, but not crossing it with the Yankees fans. And then Mercado's comments afterwards just seemed really mature and had a good perspective on things. What was your take on the whole situation as it unfolded?
Yeah, Joe, it's crazy, man. All that happened a 5 minute span right at the end of the game. You've been in that position where you've got your game story written that the Guardians have come back and won a game 4-3. All of a sudden it changes in a heartbeat, and I had my head down. I was writing, trying to rework the story to get it in on time, And Zach Mizel from The Athletic was sitting right next to me, and he goes, Straw just jumped into the stands. So I looked up and I see him hanging on the fence. And it was just a wild scene, and very, very unfortunate. I mean, Yankees, I mean, it, you know, I thought, you know, that, you know, that, you know, Mercado and Straw might face some disciplinary action from MLB for, you know, kind of provoking the incident. But, you know, I called, you know, I checked around. It doesn't sound like anything's going to happen. I think, you know, they understand that, you know, Mercado and Straw were sticking up for, you know, Kwan, protecting their teammate. And, you know, it was really great to see the Yankees, all, you know, Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and a bunch of other Yankees come out onto the outfield and, you know, protect the Indians, try to calm the fans down. I should say the Guardians. And it was an ugly scene, but I think it was good to know, you know, that the Guardians are going to stick up for each other. The players are sticking up for each other. And I think you always see that in that kind of incident. You know, you're going to stick up for the guys wearing the same uniforms as you.
Right. And, you know, and there was a little bit on social media there where, you know, the Guardians team account tweeted out a photo of them walking off the field together, sort of, you know, Reservoir Dogs style, where the shot had Straw and Mercado and the other guys in the picture. And they tweeted the word, you know, just team, family, Straw responded with. And it looks like it could have been one of those, you know, galvanizing moments. What was the mood in the clubhouse immediately afterwards? I can't imagine a lot of people were, you know, saying much in terms of being, you know, sort of out loud, but I bet you there was a real sense of us versus them out there.
Yeah, it certainly was. And, you know, Tito, you know, Francona didn't say a whole lot about it. You know, he said there's just no reason to do that, you know, throw stuff on the field. And Mercado was great about it. He talked for a long time about it. Straw wasn't initially going to talk about it. He walked past a group of reporters and just said, the worst fan base in on the planet, you know, brutal. You know, he said, you know, made a statement like that. And then I think Bart Swain talked to him, and about 10 minutes later, you know, he talked as well. And, you know, those were the two guys that you wanted to talk to, you know, from the media standpoint. And they were, I thought they both handled it great. The next day, you know, fortunately, you know, there was extra security out there. The Yankees put extra security in the bleachers, you know, between innings. There was a, you know, bunch of security guys standing on a warning track. You know, Straw said, you know, it wasn't too bad out there. It was just a normal heckling. And he goes, I'm relevant now. You know, they knew, they know who I am. So he was having some fun with it. But, you know, I thought they handled it well. You know, Straw just, you know, said, you know, I'm going to protect my guy, Kwan. You can't say that stuff about him. And, you know, so, you know, but when you do that, when you kind of, you know, taunt the tiger, the talk to the bleacher creatures, you're going to get some feedback.
Well, yeah. And I wanted to get your opinion over the years of, I mean, this can't be the only time you've seen, you know, reactions go that way from a Yankee Stadium crowd.
Yeah, you know, I remember in 1996, Mike Hargrove when he was managing the club, he pulled the team off the field. you know, they were throwing baseballs at Albert Bell and those little souvenir bats. They were throwing them at him. There was another time when Mel Hall was playing the outfield. They threw what Mel called a frozen Cornish game hen.
How did they get a frozen Cornish game hen into the ballpark?
I still have no idea, you know, how that happened. But, you know, there's been some incidents. You know, that's a rowdy crowd. And, you know, Joel Skinner used to, when he was coaching third base for the Indians, he said the fans just used to wear him out, you know, when he was standing. And so, you know, that's a really a vocal crowd. It's a, you know, it's kind of, you know, they're into it from the first pitch. And there's a lot of them, you know, it's crowds 30 to 40,000 a night. And, you know, there's a lot, you know, there's more good fans than bad fans, like in any other ballpark, but there's a lot of guys, you know, there's a lot of people, frustrated New Yorkers that sit, that go to the ball game just to, I think, heckle the opposition.
Yeah, I guess if the only reason you're buying those tickets is to, you know, express your anger at someone or throw $45 beers at people, I think, you know, you might need to sort of have your head examined. You know, the response from fans on social media immediately afterwards, I think it went to both extremes. I think, you know, Yankee fans were embarrassed. They knew, you know, what their brethren had done was not right. And it was a bad look, but really every fan base has those bad looks. Every fan base has those black eye games. You know, you can talk about Philadelphia throwing snowballs at Santa Claus, and you can talk about Bottlegate in Cleveland. Yeah. You know, there are moments when, you know, it just looks bad on everyone and you give everybody a bad name. But, you know, I think calling for Major League Baseball to empty the stadium or to ban fans from a game in some way, I think that's just an extreme reaction. And there were people definitely calling for that. And I'm just like, that's Yankee Stadium in New York. You're not going to keep fans who paid for their tickets to games from going to the game. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know what, you know, the video, if, you know, if the video police are out there and they can single out the people that were throwing the beer cans at, you know, Mercado especially, you know, so I don't know if that those fans will face any discipline or
they will
lose their, you know, season tickets, or if they do have season tickets. I don't know if they sell season tickets in the bleachers. I'm not sure, you know, who knows what action will be taken.
But well,
I'm glad they had extra security out there the next day.
But that's the thing, is, you know, the league policy is that the individual team has discretion over how to punish and how to, you know, secure and patrol that area. So it's really up to the Yankees to decide what they do. And, you know, if you're the Yankees, you don't want to make it look like you're going after your own, you know, fans there, but you do have to make sure that I think the league and its teams take player safety very seriously. And if you're not showing the Players Association that you're going to do everything within your power to make sure something like that doesn't happen again, then I think there's an issue. But I think, you know, moving forward, at least for the time being, it's going to have a real chilling effect on what happens in New York, you know, until Boston shows up. You know, who knows what we could call our colleagues over at Mass Live and see if they've got any stories about what happens when the Red Sox come to town and how the bleacher creatures treat them. But I think a beer shower might be the least of the most severe infractions levied upon them.
Yeah, Terry Francona was great. His three daughters, a bunch of his family members were there. His grandkids were there, and he went out to check on Kwan when he was coming back. You know, the fans were really on him, and he thought, you know, he didn't react to him. But then finally, when, you know, Straw jumped on the fence, he missed that, and he turned around and saw that. But he said one of his daughters was yelling at him. Was arguing with New York with some Yankee fans, you know, and he said her husband was mortified. When he said it used to be a badge of honor, just like when at the old Yankee Stadium, where you would, during his national anthem, he'd be out standing in front of the dugout with the rest of the team. He said they just wear you out. He goes, and that was like a badge of honor. That was fun.
Right. Well, that weekend in New York with his family there cost Tito, because he said they had a couple of rooms at the hotel, and I guess the granddaughters went to the American Girl store and bought a bunch of dolls, and that can get pretty expensive. No matter who you are or what your salary is, I think we all live in fear of little girls and their American doll obsessions. So our American Girl doll, I don't even know. I have a son, so I have no idea about any of that kind of stuff. let's move on from New York, because we'll have that's one of the things that they're able to, you know, put it in their back pocket and move on. The Yankees still have to come to Cleveland for a series, so we'll see how Cleveland fans react when they get here. But right now, you've started this West Coast swing of the trip, and the offense that that wasn't there in New York came with you in on the flight across the country. What can they do to get going here?
Well, Joe, I think, you know, obviously you've got to get the middle of the lineup going. Ramirez, you know, after the hot start, has you know, he had a bad series in New York. I mean, the last game, at least he got on base, but they did a great job handcuffing him. Reyes has just been terrible, though. You know, he's gotten off to really a slow start. Last night, you know, with the one chance they did have, you know, he took 3-0, and then he swung at ball four and ball five, you know, where he could have walked and loaded the bases, you know, and you know, pass the baton on. I think he's really feeling a lot of pressure to drive in some runs. Rosario's kind of cooled off. I mean, he keeps hitting the ball hard, but he's, you know, he just missed a home run last night, but he's hitting the ball hard, but he's lining out right at people, or he's hitting into double plays. So, you know, they just got to get going, especially in the middle of the lineup. I thought, you know, Straw's cooled off a little bit. It'd be nice to get Kwan back in there at the top of the lineup, but, you know, he's got to be healthy.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You expect after, you know, that those first like 14 days of the season, you would expect some regression there to the mean, to the average, you know, where these guys are. Jose, you know, looking bad over the last, you know, 4 or 5 games is a bit of a concern, but you know he's going to be there. It's Framil that, you're right, they need to get going. I thought in that at bat that you talked about with, you know, first and second, nobody out, and a chance to do some damage there. The aggression was there because he swung at ball four, like you said, but the one that got me was the 3-1 pitch that glanced off his bat for a foul tip, because he was frustrated after that. When he knew it was ball four, knew that just the margin of those inches where he had the deflection and the foul tip. Could have been really, that's where the game was decided, because like you said, you're talking Josh Naylor at the plate with the bases loaded and nobody out and a real chance to score some runs there.
Yeah. And you know, that definitely, and I think, you know, he shattered the bat after that, he was really frustrated. And I think you just feel that growing. And we talked to him after Friday's game in New York. He was complaining about the umpires, you know, the bad strike zone. And, you know, I think, you know, that's all kind of building up inside there. When, you know, when you're going good, it doesn't matter who's behind the plate, you know, you're going to get your hits. And when you're going bad, you're looking for somebody to blame. And, you know, the umpire, you know, so I think there's a lot of frustration right now with Framil. And I don't know what you do, Joe. I think they rested him one day, and do you move him down in the lineup? I don't know. Tito doesn't overreact this early in the season usually.
Yeah, I think you put him back in there and you just let him keep going. Tito's fond of saying he's a guy who, once he gets hot, can get as hot as he is cold, and he can carry you for a week. I mean, I would not be surprised to see a stretch out of Framil where he hits 3-4 home runs and drives in 8-9 runs in a 4 or 5 game span. But right now there's just no indication that the eye at the plate and the ability to control the strikes. That's one of the things that he talked about in the offseason. You know, he worked with Juan Soto and Soto's coach about controlling the strike zone. And really, we haven't seen that discipline. And, you know, it's probably worth a deep dive here, just looking at the numbers from FanGraphs and seeing what his ability to control the strike zone is like, and even going back to a period maybe last year when he was controlling the strike zone and putting balls in play and hitting the ball hard. So we've seen what happens when he gets hot. So I think with the potential of always being there, if he's healthy, you're not going to do much. You got to keep playing him.
Yeah, definitely. He's your guy. He's the DH. He's he's your, you know, cleanup hitter, where fourth or fifth hitter, wherever you want to put him. And, you know, he's not going to get hot from the bench. And I think, you know, maybe you give him a mental day off here or there. But, yeah, like you said, Joe, he's got to be in the lineup.
Hey, Oscar Gonzalez is hitting down at AAA, and John Kenzie Noel had two home runs down in, I believe, Lake County. He did those. Noel, I think, is on the 40-man roster. So
yeah, Noel's on the 40-man.
So, you know, who knows? That would be if this is a prolonged slump with some you know, some sort of disastrous results, would be when you start looking internally for options like that. But I don't see that as being the case anytime soon. All right, game two of the series, Tristan McKenzie on the mound against Patrick Sandoval tonight. Should be fun to see McKenzie and see how deep he can go, you know, as he continues to get stretched out. But McKenzie versus Trout and Ohtani should be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, definitely. McKenzie, he only got into the fifth inning in his last start, I think. So he's got some, I think he's probably got an extra day or two of rest. It's going to be, it'll be a good start for him. Be an interesting start for him, I should say.
All right. We will talk to you again tomorrow on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. 20s, we'll see you then.
All right, Joe.